Mongoose was led by Edward Lansdale at the Defense Department and William King Harvey at the CIA.
Doesn't Lansdale sound like the name of someone who, like, their boss yells their last name angrily? Yeah. Lansdale!
My name's Ed. All right, Lansdale.
Sit down, Lansdale, and shut the door. You're in deep shit this time. You can't just requisition French fries whenever you want.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
I gotta go to the bathroom, or my bladder's just gonna explode.
And Ryan.
I was gonna make a Hawk 2 joke, but I'm not gonna do it.
No, don't do it.
I'll restrain it. Myself.
Well, it's kind of your soda can kind of made a Hawk 2 sound.
You know what I'm saying? You get me?
What do you got there? Welch's grape? What is that?
No. Bro, listen. So I don't know if you saw
carbonated
it. Welch's is making the hard seltzer.
No.
But they're not making a seltzer. Grape? It's vodka. Yeah, they have grape in vodka. I think it's like strawberry and kiwi in vodka. But it's Welch's. And the one right in front on the picture was Welch's grape and vodka. And I was like, oh,
so
my,
you got to get that. And you got to get some God. Fucking peanut butter schnapps.
Oh, man.
I mean, you got in peanut there. Butter and jelly.
No, I got the what's this, Voodoo Ranger. Voodoo Ranger. I just went to the gas station. I saw 9% alcohol, and I was like,
"Yeah,
sold."
Yeah, Voodoo's good.
Yeah, it's actually pretty. Yeah, they have Tropic Ranger or something, like Tropic Force. I don't know. It's good.
I just look for the bottle that looks like Hunter S. Thompson would like it, and then I get two of those. You know.
So one Dan Aykroyd vodka.
Yeah.
I've had his Crystal Skull vodka. It's really good.
No. Not from like an aesthetic point of view, but from like a, like, I need to level up my abuse of my own body. Point of view, you know? Like, we can't just do mescaline. We need to have turbo mescaline, you know?
Yeah, no. I don't want, yeah, no. I actually, Sammy Hagar that makes like the Cabo Wabo tequila?
Yeah, he makes Cabo Wabo.
I hate the Cabo Wabo tequila. It's not good. And I'm not a tequila fan anyway, but I can admit when they're good.
Steve was going to have a surprise guest tonight, which was Sammy Hagar, but he just canceled.
Now I'm going to have to go with the backup, which is David Lee Roth.
Yeah. And now you called him a backup, and he just texted me.
And he also just walked out. Yeah, he's
canceled. Steve, we're not going to get anybody on the show at this rate. Oh, wait. I can call Eddie. Oh, no, he's dead. Never mind. Jesus Christ. Oh, man. Speaking of dead people.
Hey, 2016 he died, right?
Oh. Yeah, that's when they finally got him. Not.
I do want to point out right here at the top, I want to apologize because last episode I was wrong about something. I did say something to the effect that the CIA had done like some Looney Tunes type shit where they try to put like a bomb into cigars or try to do like some exploding cigars.
Well,
I was incorrect. There was absolutely zero evidence that this has ever happened. And we do have evidence about the majority of assassination.
Oh, you're just talking about the bomb and the cigar.
Just the bomb and the cigar. Apparently that was more of an urban legend myth thing. So I am sorry I was wrong. However, how fucking ever. They did try to poison his cigars with botulism toxin and then get it to him.
No, you just took the wind out of Steve's sails. That's what he was talking
about. No, I got to come up with something on the fly really fast. That was like,
are you sure you just had beer?
60% of the episode.
This guy, are you sure you just had beer? Did you just go to sleep, take a B12 shot, and drink a fucking Red Bull?
Dude, I had 8 hours of sleep
today.
You're flying. So I'm actually feeling great.
I'm happy for you.
I actually got sleep for the first time in like 4 days because the last 4 days I was working on like 3 hours of sleep. So.
Oh, no. That's brutal.
Don't feel good today. You know, we're here. I'm ready to talk about Fidel.
Fidel. It is from Fidel.
And Operation Mongoose.
Yes. So as we talked about last episode, the CIA and the United States government is not too happy about Fidel Castro becoming the leader of Cuba. And they are thinking of ways to get rid of him, which comes to them eventually beginning to plan what becomes known as Operation Mongoose.
As I said, we had Operation Mongoose when I was a kid, which was just obtain Mongoose bike.
Make sure you have the pegs on the front and the back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You got to sell it. You got to take two of the homies around sometimes, you know?
Yeah, you got to sell it. Be like, Mom, you know, with this one bike, it can fit all three of us.
Mom, it can only go up in value from my misdeeds. The things I will do, the heroic acts I will commit on this bike, Mom, it can only go up in value.
Hey guys, I'm going to go invite Jessica to go stand on my pegs and drive around the neighborhood.
Jesus.
Let's all be real why we got pegs on the bikes as kids. We wanted the girl to stand on the bike so that we could drive her around.
Yeah, but not Jessica, cool. Dude. Come on. She only dates Cubans. What?
So the U.S. Defense Department, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, saw that the project's ultimate objective for Operation Mongoose would be to provide adequate justification for the U.S. military to intervene in Cuba.
Is this the same thing they did in Iraq? Basically give us justification to run in Iraq?
Kind of. Weapons, and we saw them. We saw the weapons. I looked at one of the weapons, and the weapon looked at me. The weapon looked at you?
Fidel has a truck, and on the back of that truck is a weapons-making factory that he is touring around. He is visiting Walmarts and other areas, allowing locals to come see the weapons.
Our engineer rebuilt
the latest weapons.
Our engineer rebuilt the weapons factory in Minecraft, if you want to explore how bad it is.
I can already see the CIA being like, we found weapons in Cuba, and then like putting like one of those like Toyota Technicals on Kennedy's desk, like just one of them, and just looking at him expectantly, like, let us invade. Like, they have weapons.
I just think it's shocking, like that whole thing happened, and that it's not talked about incessantly. You know,
you talk about Iraq,
and Cuba. Yeah, Iraq too.
Yeah,
or Electric Boogaloo. They
requested that the Secretary of Defense at that point, Robert McNamara, assign them responsibility for the project. But Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy retained effective control. On January 8, 1960, General Cabell, the Deputy Director of Central Intelligence, held a joint briefing on Cuba for the Department of State and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. During the meeting, Colonel L.K. White had mentioned that Fidel Castro was going to need to be dealt with. At this time, the director also discussed the need to increase covert and semi-covert programs aimed at Castro. These programs included psychological warfare, political action, economic action, and paramilitary action.
Okay.
By the 18th of January, the director had come up with various Cuban operations. Later, it was proposed that a separate branch should be created to handle everything about the anti-Castro movement. The White House division organized Branch 4, which was abbreviated WH4, as the new task force to run Cuban operations.
So directly linked to the White House.
The task force included 40 personnel, with 18 at the headquarters, 20 at the Havana station, and 2 at Santiago base. The State Department was concerned that if Castro were to be overthrown...
Wait, what? Like, were those just the names for the areas, or did they have 2 people in Havana?
They had 20 people in Havana, and they had 2 in Santiago.
Wow, okay. Covert, like, spies, or what?
Yeah. Like,
at what level?
Like,
okay.
Like, most likely Cuban nationals.
Wow.
Who were for it.
Right.
The State Department, though, was concerned that if Castro were overthrown, then the people to come after him would be worse than him, primarily being worried about Che Guevara and Raul Castro.
Didn't Raul step up after Fidel died?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was.
And it wasn't bad, right? Like, he was normal, completely fucking normal, right?
It was pretty much the same, I guess.
Okay. CIA wrong again.
So they proposed a way of getting a better leader that they approved of to be put in place to take over if Castro were eliminated.
Absolutely fucking wild. The CIA says we're going to approve a leader for another sovereign nation.
I know.
Well, this guy's vetted. He's good. He's got good fundamentals.
He's gonna look,
we put out one of those
John Smith.
We put out one of those job application things online, and we asked for entry level with 16 years of experience and a doctorate, and he showed up.
This guy came from Indeed.com, highly rated. Yeah.
Apparently he's been an intern, unpaid, for 16 years.
We've seen how well this man cashes a corporate check.
Highly reviewed on Glassdoor. Excellent guy.
Huge cock. I just had to throw that out there. That's what she said.
The CIA began to worry that their involvement with the anti-Castro movement would lead to anti-U.S. And to an anti-U.S. movement within Cuba.
You don't say.
I don't know why, but
I can never figure that one out.
On March 14th, 1960, Dulles presented a quote-unquote general covert action plan for Cuba that would focus only on the Cuban problems. Guerrilla capacity in the anti-Castro groups, both in and out of Cuba, was also discussed.
Prior to World War II, did we do this type of shit? Like, overseas?
Not really. Well, I guess mainly in, like, South America, where they would just send in the military to,
like the banana, you know,
forcibly remove, like, forcibly remove people from, like, South American leaders from their offices and then put in a guy they liked, and, like, well, in the Caribbean.
Wasn't that after World War II, or was that before?
No, even before World War One, yeah. like in Haiti and stuff, where they would just like...
We definitely fucked around in Central and South America, even during World War One, because like...
So it just got Panama worse. As our military capacity. Like,
even the Panama Canal was still fucked with by the United States down there.
Okay.
Richard Bissell, Deputy Director for Plans, asked Sheffield Edwards, Director Richard of Security... Bissell,
Deputy Director for Vacuums...
Yeah, I'll have to say that's granddad right
Deputy
there.
Deputy the director for maids at the local Marriott.
If Edwards could establish contact with the U.S. gambling syndicate that was active in Cuba. The objective clearly was the assassination of Castro, although Edwards claims that there was a studied avoidance of the term in his conversation with Bissell. You know, if there's a way we could make him not, you know,
maybe you could live suck anymore him up with your vacuums. Maybe you could clean him up. I don't know.
Maybe you could eliminate him like so much dust and dirt.
Maybe you could put him inside of a bag and put him in the garbage, if you know what I mean.
Very, very much like a bowling ball that you could pick up with the suction power of your vacuum and deposit him elsewhere outside of Cuba.
Let me tell you guys something. Let me tell you something. The Dyson ball cleaner vacuum. Wildly misnamed. Okay. Wildly misnamed.
Whoa, buddy.
Legal needs to be involved with that one, that they need to really rename it.
Well, good thing you work in an ER, right? So
how many pieces of furniture did you break with a bowling ball?
Listen. I would rather die than go to my emergency room
where
I
work
with my dick stuck in a vacuum. And I do not say this because I doubt the abilities and knowledge of the people that I work with. It is because I would die. I would rather kill myself than show up to an emergency room.
Dude, you're putting it out there. It's going to happen now. You're going to go there. They're going to be like, hey, we got to put a Foley bag in. He'd be like, go ahead, dog. There's like 8 holes. Go ahead.
I don't put my dick in vacuum, so it's not going to happen.
Oh, man. That is exactly what I'm naming the episode. I don't put my dick in vacuum, so it's not going to happen. Communism. God damn it.
Do you think in socialized medicine, would they cover that?
Yes.
What do you think they'd be like, bro?
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Because they have a big problem in the UK where, like, people will be like really, really drunk or like hungover, and they'll call an ambulance, and they're just like, this is not like, we're going to treat you, but this is not what this is for.
Oh, so the UK, I read this, the NHS in the UK, their ambulance service actually has the ability to tell these people to go fuck off and give them a cab voucher. They can take a cab to the hospital.
Yeah.
Nice.
And they should.
The United States could fucking never, this third world country we live in.
Our medical system is a total, basically.
Well, yeah, you can't miss out on them charging like $10,000 for a 20-minute ride in a.
Hey, but if you're rich, if you're rich, you get pure socialism. Everything's free. You don't have to pay anything.
Get a muffin basket.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Bissell recalled that the idea originated with J.C. King, the chief of White House division, although King now recalls having only limited knowledge of such a plan and at a much later date, about mid-1962. The Anti-Castro Revolutionary Council, consisting of a group of Cubans, released a press statement at a press conference in New York City on March 22nd, 1961. The press statement announced the unification of forces against Castro and outlined their platform for their mission. Their objectives consisted of overthrowing the quote-unquote communist tyranny which enslaves the people of Cuba. The plan was comprehensive, and it lists their agrarian policy, economic policy, systems of law, and other such sort of reforms and systems they'd put into place.
So we have a copy of this. Over. We have a copy. What? We have a copy of this plan that like we can actually see.
Yeah, it was a press release.
Oh, it was a press release. Oh, okay.
In fucking New York, are you here? Are you with us?
I'm saying, I didn't know if they. I didn't hear the press release part. I thought they would like put a plan together or something and just gathered in New York. You know.
Hmm.
This is them coming out and saying we are the anti Castro movement. We demand to be taken seriously.
Oh, are they trying to like be like that group that steps in, assuming the CIA can get their head out of their asses and stop getting everything delivered by Wile E. Coyote and Acme? That like this is going to be the group that's going to step up and take over? Is that their
yeah? This is pretty much like their guys that like they're going to come up with something when they come in. Okay. I think eventually they pass it between different former Batista generals as who's going to be like the guy. Like the former like Cuban military generals, like under the former regime.
Gotcha. Okay.
The press statement was implemented as another propaganda tool that the CIA felt they could use to further their mission. There were different prerequisites for those that were recruited and enlisted by the CIA. They must be pro-Western. They had to be anti-communist, politically neutral, and capable of gathering other Cuban support. Specific goals were identified for Cubans onboarded for the Cuban opposition front. The principal goal of them was to restore the 1940 Cuban constitution. The Cuban Opposition Front's purpose can be summarized as to act as a beacon to attract other anti-Castro groups, to serve as a scapegoat in case covert operations were discovered, and finally to act as a potential replacement to Castro after his fall.
There it is.
For the Cuban operation, they made a list of potential guerrilla fighters within the Cuban provinces. There were seven groups consisting of each anywhere between 180 and over 4,000 possible defectors. They consisted of political prisoners, and guerrillas that the CIA believed could be convinced to enlist in the operation against Castro. In response to the Soviet Union's increasing amount of weaponry, as well as growing influence of the Communist Party in Cuba, as early as June 1960, there were 500 Cuban exiles being trained as paramilitary members in order to execute the Bay of Pigs invasion, with some of those exiles being trained in Panama.
Panama!
Do you happen to know, Steve, how big the Cuban army was back at this time? Like roughly?
Me, no, but Steve might.
All right, what about you, Steve?
I'm sure it was sizable.
I mean, okay. I don't know exactly. I mean, like, if you had to guess in the 60s, would you say that Cuba had a military of like hundreds of thousands or like tens of thousands? Or just thousands?
Well, today they have 50,000 active personnel.
So back then they probably had somewhere like in the neighborhood of like 10, right? Thousands, sorry, 10,000, not actually just 10 fucking dudes around the island, but like 10,000. Well,
they probably had more than that.
I guess my question is, why couldn't the CIA just get enough people to just fucking steamroll them?
Well, because they're not like, because the exile population is not that big. And like they want it all to be Cubans. They're not just, you know, recruiting. Right. Like,
yeah. You don't want it to be obvious that it's us doing it, but like, I don't know.
They don't want to pull a Seinfeld and enlist a bunch of Dominicans, you know,
Seinfeld four.
Okay.
Cause you know, they're just going to roll the cigars too tight and
Cartwright
nightmare
four.
Well, I mean, who would be mad? Are they worried about like backlash from the rest of the United States? Because if that's the case, you know, no offense to our Hispanic listeners, but you could just grab a whole bunch of people from Mexico and say they're Cuban because your average white person has no fucking idea what the difference is. They'll be like, oh, okay.
Well, it's not the point that they don't want to upset the United States. It's just that they want the veneer that this is a like native like, this is not the United States installing a new government. This is like a homegrown.
This is grassroots.
This is grassroots. These guys, you know, they're just like the founding fathers, like the Taliban and the Contras. You know, they're good guys.
Gotcha. That's so fucking weird to be like, oh, the Taliban, they're good guys.
So due to a declassification of a bunch of like around thousands of pages by the CIA in 2011, which is the 50th anniversary of the invasion, it is now known that the CIA task force in charge of the paramilitary assault knew the operation could not succeed without becoming an open invasion supported by the U.S. military.
And yet they forged on.
According to Peter Kornblau, this was the most important revelation of the declassification of the official history of the CIA.
So they knew.
Yeah,
they knew that it was never going to fucking work, and yet they just pressed on, huh?
Yeah, there was a lot of elements to it. As we'll talk, there were other parts of it that were supposed to happen but didn't. It was mostly because of Kennedy was just kind of in over his head.
I mean, I wonder if the thinking or like the line of thinking was, hey, listen, if we destabilize Cuba enough, then we can send in the military under the guise of this country's unstable and they're right next door to us. So we need to take, you know, action to make sure that we can, you know, not have a complete, you know, breakdown of the Cuban government. I could see that they're line of thinking being like, all right, we're going to eventually need the military. We can just fuck Cuba up enough
right.
to justify them going in. It's gross. it's gross. And I'm disgusted, but I can at least entertain their line of thinking as disgusting as it is.
Yeah. It's an evil plan, but
it's a plan.
There's some rationale. Yeah.
You at least thought about something. Like, I'll give you credit, but you're a dipshit for doing it, or all you assholes for like even thinking that this was something that you were gonna do.
On April 12, 1961, the CIA prepared a full report on the Cuban operation that outlined its orientation and concept. The plot against Castro would be characterized by the appearance of a, quote-unquote, growing and increasingly effective internal resistance, helped by the activities of defeated Cuban aircraft and the infiltration of weapons and small groups of men. The report further emphasized particular steps to be taken to achieve the appearance of internal revolution. Miro Cardona would give public statements accentuating that the U.S. government was not involved and that any operations were performed by Cubans.
He's like kicking the American flag off camera. No. It's totally all them.
The sticker like peels off the plane and he's like trying to like hold it up as he's like talking at the press conference.
American flag? No, it's a Cuban flag. You saw too many stripes and it's a different blue background with a star. Listen, you're confused. Your glasses are at Lens Crafters. Come back when you pick them back up. That is a Cuban flag, not an American flag.
Oh, this happens all the time. They just give us the Puerto Rican flag instead of the Cuban flag because they look so similar. The colors are flipped, you know.
You know how it is. I mean, you're right there. You've seen it.
How many times has this happened to you when you go to the store? Let me tell you. Just days later, on April 16th, There were initially 11 targets that were scheduled to be attacked.
Okay, attacked by who?
By aircraft.
Okay.
The list of targets later was narrowed down to 4. These 4 included the San Antonio Air Base, the Campo Libertad Air Base, and finally the naval bases located at Batabano and Nueva Gorona.
I like it. We're going to attack ourselves to kind of do like a false flag attack so that we can attack Cuba. I like
no, these them. Are these are places in Cuba.
We're going to bomb San Antonio base. They'll never see it coming.
No, this is it would be funny if the guy accidentally bombed San Antonio as opposed to San Antonio, Cuba. He got like, it says here right on the map.
It says, yeah, it says San Antonio. Right? What the fuck do you mean? There's an Oakland, Florida, and every time I'm on the highway and I drive by the sign that like advertises like Oakland or whatever, I'm like, fuck, I am so far away from where I need to be.
Jesus.
Just stupid dad jokes to myself by myself in my car.
Oh, that's the best time to do a dad joke.
Additionally, the number of B-26 crafts to be used in the strike was reduced from 15 to 5, which ultimately limited the U.S. air coverage. The CIA's official history of the Bay of Pigs operation notes that the limited air cover left the brigade's air force open to attacks by Castro's forces.
Oh, okay. So this is the Bay of Pigs that we're talking about right now. Right?
This is another operation.
Oh, okay. So this operation went down the exact same way the Bay of Pigs went down. It failed because the air cover that was promised to be there just wasn't there. Right?
Yes.
0-2, baby.
The document states, well, there's no doubt that if there had been more JMATE aircraft and more air crews, constant air cover would have been possible. Both Kennedys ignored the fact that limited airstrikes would prevent the brigade air force from being effective because of the risk of counterattack by the Cuban Air Force. A White House staffer was quoted saying, "The plan was to strike Castro's air force on the ground before the battle began and then provide air support with an anti-Castro air force, consisting of some 24 surplus planes flown by Cuban exiles. That plan failed." On April 18th, there was an air transport scheduled from the U.S. Air Force, and that was the best day for the brigade's B-26s to mobilize. During this strike, there were no aircraft lost, and there was a successful strike made on the Castro column moving from Playa Larga to Playa Giron. The official history of the operation notes that there were several uncertainties as to the outcomes of various operations between April 17th and 19th, 1961, including the number and identities of casualties of both pilots and Cuban civilians, as well as a question over the possible use of napalm by acting chief of the U.S. Air Force Section Garfield Thorsrud's aircraft on April 17th, 1961.
Wait, the active chief of, like, the Air Force used napalm?
That we don't know if that he had that they had been given napalm or not.
Oh, okay. So he wasn't up there like that dude of the Air Force dropping napalm on people.
Well, he might have been, but we're not sure.
Okay. Probably was then, if we're not sure.
What do you not understand about we're not sure, Ryan? Jesus.
He definitely
you
was.
Keep asserting definites. Like, Steve keeps going, well, we don't really know.
In the year of our Lord, 2024. Ryan wants me to admit it,
and he's like, got your ass.
So he definitely ate Doritos, right? Well, we don't really know.
In 2024, if the CIA is like, yeah, we're not really sure. Yes, the fuck. That's the yes. That's a hard yes.
The official history notes that the use of napalm had not been officially approved until the next day, April 18th, 1961. Oh,
they said to wait till the next day.
Okay, exactly. Bullshit. There's no fucking way.
They did a few test napalms to make sure that they don't sound funny, and then the real ones, those were great.
10 days later, after that, Tide dropped 5 B-26 bombs.
Tide, like the detergent company?
Dropped the pods all over the place.
The Cubans thought they were food and started eating them.
No, tragic. They knew what they were. They came out and they had the cleanest clothes anybody in the West had ever seen. The whitest whites. The most brilliant colors. That's why we had to invade. Their clothes were far too fucking nice.
Same thing
Kennedy
with the
said,
Nazis.
I cannot live close enough to these people with the cleanest clothes I've ever seen. Yeah, you need to go in there and get them.
This reminds me of the Nazis when they had those Hugo Boss.
So tight. So pristine.
How can a man wear a white polo shirt that long throughout the day and keep it clean?
Mine all look like era mustard armpits. Era.
Mongoose was led by Edward Lansdale at the Defense Department and William King Harvey at the CIA.
Doesn't Lansdale sound like the name of someone who, like, their boss yells their last name angrily? Yeah. Lansdale!
My name's Ed. All right, Lansdale.
Sit down, Lansdale, and shut the door. You're in deep shit this time. You can't just requisition French fries whenever you want.
Lansdale was chosen due to his experience with counterinsurgency in the Philippines during the Hakbulop Rebellion.
The Hakbulop Rebellion.
the Hakbalahop rebellion, which was a sort of like a native uprising in the Philippines against the government there.
Yeah.
As well as because of his experience supporting Vietnam's Diem regime. Samuel Halpern, a CIA co-organizer, conveyed the breadth of involvement, quote-unquote, CIA and the U.S. Army and military forces and Department of Commerce and Immigration, Treasury, God knows who else, everybody was in Mongoose. It was a government-wide operation run out of Bobby Kennedy's office with Ed Lansdell as the mastermind. During the planning of Operation Mongoose, a March 1962 CIA memorandum saw a brief but precise description of pretexts which the Joint Chiefs of Staff considered would provide justification for American military intervention in Cuba. The formerly classified memorandum depicts the way in which the CIA and the Joint Chiefs of Staff saw a reason to invade the island of Cuba that would be acceptable to the American people. The document states, quote-unquote, such a plan would enable a logical buildup of incidents to be combined with other seemingly unrelated events to camouflage the ultimate objective and create the necessary impression of Cuban rashness and irresponsibility on a large scale directed at other countries as well as the United States.
The Joint Chiefs of Staff are all sitting around that gigantic-ass table, and they're like, all right, how can we sell this to the people of America? How can we justify this? Tell them their cigars are amazing. We got to invade and take them all.
Well, this sort of goes into Operation Northwoods, where like a lot of like Northwoods was just like the very like crazy like spitballing of like what type of false flag operations can we do to get the American people on board?
Oh, we could bomb the World Trade.
Oh no, your mic cut out there.
Hold on, there's somebody knocking on my front door. Hello,
take that back.
So, because I mean, I obviously have a gigantic black hole here, blind spot. What is Operation Northwoods?
Operation Northwoods is a thing that gets brought out a lot. We can talk about it after we talk about Mongoose. But essentially, like, where the U.S. government is saying, like, we're going to blow up some planes and claim American citizens were on them and then use that as a pretext to invade Cuba.
Whoa.
Among other things.
Please at least tell me that they were like, we're just going to shoot down empty planes. Like,
it's
got to
be real deaths or it doesn't work. People won't believe it. Just put someone you don't like up there, some college students or something. I don't know.
It proceeds to state, the desired resultant from the execution of this plan would be to place the United States in the apparent position of suffering defensible grievances from a rash and irresponsible government of Cuba and to develop an international image of a Cuban threat to peace in the Western Hemisphere.
I called it.
Another significant consideration for their involvement was that U.S. intervention should not involve the Soviet Union. Given that Cuba was not part of the Warsaw Pact and there had not yet been any significant evidence of a connection between Cuba and the Soviet Union, military intervention was believed to be able to take place without major consequences from the Soviet Union.
I just want to go back real quick. Going back to the first episode, the entire reason that we started this nonsense down there is not because anybody had any serious dislike of Fidel Castro himself. It was the big businesses that wanted basically a foot on the island, and Castro was saying, go fuck yourself, right? Like, this is effectively like a capitalism thing, right?
I mean, that's kind of how the U.S. government works, dude, right?
Right, okay. So we've been talking for 2 hours, and we've talked about assassination plots and invasions of a sovereign country all over people just trying to make money.
Well, yeah, because part of it was that when he came into power, he nationalized a lot of things,
right?
And then so like when countries started nationalizing things, even today,
a totally different country, not a Cuban, the United States is mad about that.
Well, it's like one of those things where. Like, for instance, like Allende in Chile, like he nationalized the copper industry because like Chile is like one of the world's largest providers of copper. And it's sort of like the thing that's happening with lithium, too, is that these countries are like, well, these natural resources that are finite, like these are literally our country.
These are literally ours, motherfuckers.
And if anybody should be making money off them, it should be the people who live here as opposed to a country a company from a country that lives thousands of miles away, and all the money stays in that country.
Which is entirely fucking reasonable.
But no, you're wrong, Ryan. It's not reasonable. This is crazy communist talk.
No, I'm sorry. The United States needs all your fucking bananas there, Chiquita. Get the fuck out of the way. God, I hate this. I hate everything.
There were 32 tasks or plans, just as there were 33 living species of mongoose accepted at that time, considered under the Cuba Project, some of which were carried out.
That's actually why they picked mongoose. They were like, well, what genus of animal has 32 plant mongoose? The mongoose?
No, the mongoose is actually at 33. Oh, okay.
They have a guy in like a short sleeve white shirt with like big, like black, like chunky glasses, just looking through the encyclopedia, just pouring through it.
Plastic pen, like pocket protector.
Yeah. Counting all of them. He's got other ones at like a board and they're like writing it down.
Good God, man. There's only one species and it's the mongoose.
It's like
TI-86 on his hip, like a cell phone. Dude, back TI-86.
They didn't have a TI-86 back then. They had a TI. That was it. And I'm not talking about the rubber band man.
It's like Hidden Figures, but they've all got zoo books that they're pouring through. The plans varied in efficacy and intention, with propagandistic purposes for effective disruption of the Cuban government and economy. Plans included the use of U.S. Army Special Forces, the destruction of Cuban sugar crops, and mining of harbors. There was a meeting of the special group augmented in the Secretary of State, David Rusk's conference room on August 10th, 1962, at which Secretary of Defense McNamara broached the subject of the liquidation of Cuban leaders.
David Rusk, that sounds familiar. Is he like an important figure?
Well, yeah, he's like one of Kennedy's guys.
Okay.
He's Secretary of State.
Yeah. I'm just trying to remember like something specific with that dude, but
I think he usually goes by Dean Rusk.
Hmm. No. Nothing happening.
Yeah. I find it really gross that they talk about liquidation of human beings. Like, bro, like I know what you're doing, but at least find a different way to put it. That's really fucked.
The discussion resulted in a Project Mongoose Action Memorandum prepared by Edward Lansdale.
Lansdale?
On August 4th, 1962, a special group of Operation Mongoose met to discuss proceedings. The Attorney General, Vice President Johnson, and General Lansdale were there amongst others. While they discussed some self-interest in acquiring Cuban waters for mining rights, planning military contingency plans, and attacking Guantanamo, these beliefs and ideas were not shared by all participants. By the end of the meeting, they determined...
Lyndon Johnson and Lansdale? Yeah. Lansdale just sitting there, just, Mr. Vice President, would you put that cock away? Jesus. For our listeners, I'm not being vulgar. LBJ was known to take his cock out.
Yeah, I'm about to say, who was the one that whipped it out at all times? They had, like, staff meetings in the bathroom just to intimidate people with the size of his fucking hog. Like,
hey, guys, look at my Lebanon bologna down here. Sir, we're in Lebanon. Oh, that wouldn't be appropriate.
No, well, my dick is still bigger than everybody else's.
It's like I'm sure this happens all the time. No, this is actually the first time, sir.
What? Okay.
By the end of the meeting, they determined four main objectives. Number one, they needed more intelligence on Cuba to determine how to proceed.
Well, that's that much is evident. They need more intelligence. Jesus.
This would likely involve further probes by the CIA into Cuba.
How about when you order 10 planes, you get 10 instead of 5?
they ordered 15.
How many do we need?
Moron.
About 15. All right. We'll send you 5.
Number two, they needed to increase the amount of sabotage their agents were involved in. The line, quote, quote, "there should be considerably more sabotage" is underlined.
just underlined.
Number three,
pink the regulation,
the regulations and restrictions need to be realized so that the CIA as an agency and their operation agents could take some shortcuts in training and preparations.
What?
And number They needed to know clearly where they stood on legal grounds and what they could do so they could expedite things.
Yeah, that's never been a problem, ever.
And number four, that the CIA would do anything they could to dispose of Castro and stop the spread of communism into the Western Hemisphere. This section read, all efforts should be made to develop new and imaginative approaches to the possibility of getting rid of the Castro regime.
New and it's imaginative.
Every time we start talking about like how to assassinate Castro, all I think of is Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. And
it really just Castro does feel that
just
way.
Like meep, meep, and just running away, like go fuck yourself. Meep, meep.
Yeah. And Spy vs. Spy was a documentary.
Here's a webcomic. I used to love Spy vs. Spy. Here's a webcomic idea. You just make a webcomic that's just fictitious plans to eliminate Castro, and then you just release one every week.
It'll be the next Marmaduke.
Just come up with like creative plans to do it and just release them. Then people ask you if they're real. You look at them and you go... You just like smirk, you know.
It might be.
Are they real?
A knowing wink.
I'm not that clever. Let's just put it that way.
I have a Spy vs. Spy, like the complete collection. They call it the complete case book. So it's every comic that they ever put out for Spy vs. Spy.
That's cool as shit.
It's so excellent. I love it. Like old school comics are my jam. I've got the Far Side, like hardbound, every Far Side Gary Larson put out. I got the Calvin and Hobbes Treasury, but I also have all the books themselves. And then I got the Spy vs. Spy complete.
I heard you were a big Dilbert fan.
Go fuck yourself.
He only likes the burritos.
Listen, the dill burritos, didn't they get a bunch of people like sick with E. coli? Yes, or something? They did.
Caused a massive recall.
You like eat one dill burrito or whatever the fuck they call those stupid ass things. Your asshole starts falling out on the toilet.
I believe it was a dill Dorito.
On October 26, 1962, Castro wrote a letter to Khrushchev outlining his beliefs pertaining to what would happen in the act of aggression and told him to rest assured that Cuba would resist an act with opposing force the opposing force of aggression.
Okay.
So Operation Northwoods which was proposed in 1962, was signed by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and presented to Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara for approval. And this, as I said, intended to use false flag operations to justify operation, or I should say Operation Northwoods as well, as I mentioned before, was proposed in 1962 and was signed by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and presented to Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara for approval, that intended to use false flag operations to justify intervention in Cuba.
Dude, did you just say the same sentence twice? Or am I crazy?
Well, I said it wrong first.
Okay.
I corrected myself.
Oh, okay. I
said Operation Mongoose, and it was Northwoods.
You know, I just wanted to know. You know, I've had a couple pops off thing, you know, my vape, you know.
Yeah, my dog.
I wasn't sure if time was repeating itself, or, you know.
I have to go back.
I got this new one, dude, and I'm not going to use it anymore. Like, you just lose gaps of time. Like, you're just sitting there and you're watching TV, and then the show's
all of a sudden, it's over.
The fucking show's over.
You look at the credits, you're like, shit, what's happened?
Where did I go?
You start watching it. The lights are on. It starts on the first episode. You blink and then the lights are off, and it's on that like Netflix. Are you still watching? And it's like,
no, the what's it called commercials coming on, the Pure Moods.
Oh my god,
Cassie's already asleep.
Tubular Bells is playing.
Sail away.
Oh man, it's like one of the first playlists I make on any new platform is the Pure Moods playlist, if it's available.
That entire CD is a banger, dog. Everyone start to finish is a fucking hit.
Fucking Enigma was so unique.
Didn't it have the theme to the X-Files on it?
Yes, it did. Yes, it absolutely did.
So among courses of action under Northwoods that were considered were real was to do real and simulated attacks on U.S. or foreign soil, which would be blamed on the Cuban government. These would have involved attacking or reporting fake attacks on Cuban exiles, damaging U.S. bases and ships, Cuban aircraft, quote-unquote Cuban aircraft attacking Central American countries such as Haiti or the Dominican Republic, having shipments of arms found on nearby beaches, faking a Cuban military plane destroying an American civilian aircraft, and the possible development of other false flag terror campaigns on U.S. soil.
God, oh, fuck, nothing changes. The more things change, the more they stay the exact same.
The operation, though, was rejected by Kennedy and never carried out.
They will never believe this. Get this shit off my desk.
I don't like it. It's got no Marilyn Manson.
Marilyn Manson, huh?
It's got no Marilyn Manson Bush.
We have to start the plan for my son to be the secret American president who puts Donald Trump in office.
Era.
By 1962, it was shown that other nations were also funding Castro's revolution.
Imagine being Fidel Castro and like your intelligence guy comes to you and he's like, hey, listen, there's 46 sovereign nations out to kill you and overthrow your government. What do you want to do? Like, it's one thing to be like, oh, you know, I got the weight of the world.
I'm going to have a cigar.
imagine having that kind of just looming thundercloud over your head. Not just there's 46 people that want to kill you. I'm sure that there's 46 people that want to kill me. Okay, I fucked enough people over. But
well, there's all you have to take lunatics into account, right?
Yeah, and lunatics and shit. Right. But like 46 sovereign nations want you, quote unquote, liquidated. That is, I can't wrap my mind around that.
Yeah.
Like, but how do you sleep at night?
The Cuban project played a significant role in the events that led up to the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. The project's six-phase schedule was presented by Edward Lansdale on February 20th, 1962. It was then overseen by Attorney General Robert Kennedy. President Kennedy was briefed on the operation's guidelines on March 16th, 1962. Lansdale outlined the coordinated program of political, psychological, military sabotage, an intelligence operation, as well as assassination attempts on key political leaders.
I think the Cuban Missile Crisis is like my favorite thing in history because we put nuclear missiles in like Turkey, Italy. I want to say like Ukraine, but I might be wrong. But like we put nuclear missiles within miles of Soviet Union territory, and then when they put missiles in Cuba, we're like, oh, hey, come on, guys.
Ryan, at that time, Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union.
I never claimed to be a smart man, Stephen. But like, okay, so we had, but I mean, like, you get the sentiment, right? We had missiles all around Russia, and then Russia's like, the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union's like, okay, well, we'll put like one or two in Cuba. Hey, we're being attacked. We are under direct attack from the Soviet Union and Cuba. What about the 900 missiles you put in Europe? That's not important. You put them in Cuba. That's what we're talking about right now.
So each month since his presentation, a different method was in place to destabilize the communist regime. Some of these plans included the publication of anti-Castro political propaganda, armaments being given for to militant opposition groups, the establishment of guerrilla bases throughout the country, and preparations for an October military intervention in Cuba.
They put Harambe bases everywhere? Were we going to arm guerrillas and send them in there?
Yes, Ryan.
I mean, nothing is scarier than the thought of the fucking 600-pound silverback gorilla running at you with a machine gun and body armor. That's kind of fucking scary, I'm not going to lie.
Yep. Doesn't know how to use it, which makes it even scarier. Like, what's that quote? I don't fear the best swordsman in the world. I fear the worst.
That's even what the fuck he's doing.
It's impossible to predict. What are we going to do with this guy? I don't know. One of us is going to get cut. It's definitely me.
So, as mentioned before, they had many different plans that they devised to use to assassinate Castro. And all of these were unsuccessful.
Okay. Stop hedging, by the way. Get to the plans. God damn.
Just like Wile E. Coyote.
Stop gooning our whole audience.
So when it came to execute Operation Mongoose, first, J.M. Wave, a CIA covert operations and intelligence gathering station at the University of Miami.
Father of J.B. Smooth.
Was established as an operations center for Task Force W, the CIA's unit dedicated to Operation Mongoose.
Okay.
The agency activities were all based at the Caribbean Admission Center at Opa-locka, Florida. And even at one
point. Wow, they must have been real hard up for property, boy.
Hey, could have been worse. Could have been in Hialeah.
There's a picture of Razor Ramon Scott Hall in Opa-locka, surrounded by a bunch of kids, and he's got like, I want to say like 4 or 5 gold chains on. And I'm just like, listen. This man went into Opa-locka, a white dude with a bunch of fucking money and chains, and walked out that motherfucker untouched.
Yeah, that was his first like promo video where he
100% the intercontinental champion of the fucking world. Don't come at me.
where he like walked through the neighborhood and was talking like in his like fake like Scarface accent, I love the fresh produce.
The whole crew didn't get robbed. I'm like, yeah, this is that guy. This is him. This is him, actually.
And at even one point, they enlisted the aid of the mafia, who were obviously eager to get rid of Castro and gain control of their casino operations.
Get their money back to Hyman Roth.
To plot an assassination attempt against Castro. William Harvey was one of the CIA case officers who directly dealt with the mafioso John Roselli. Mm-hmm. John Roselli was introduced to the CIA by former FBI agent Robert Mayhew. Mayhew had known Roselli since the 1950s and was aware of his connection to the gambling syndicate. Under the alias John Ralston, Roselli was tasked with recruiting Cubans from Florida to help in the assassination of Castro. Historian Stephen Rabe writes that, quote-unquote, scholars have understandably focused on the Bay of Pigs invasion, the U.S. campaign of terrorism and sabotage known as Operation Mongoose, the assassination plots against Fidel Castro, and, of course, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Less attention has been given to the state of U.S.-Cuban relations in the aftermath of the missile crisis. Rabe writes that reports from the Church Commission reveal that from June 1963 onward, the Kennedy administration intensified its war against Cuba, while the CIA integrated propaganda, economic denial, and sabotage to attack the Cuban state, as well as specific targets within.
I.e. Fidel.
One example cited is an incident where CIA agents seeking to assassinate Castro provided a Cuban official, Rolando Cubella Sacares, with a ballpoint pen rigged with a poisonous hypodermic needle. Nice. At this time, the CIA received authorization for 13 major operations in Cuba, including attacks on an electrical power plant, an oil refinery, and a sugar mill.
Can you imagine them giving you a fucking goddamn pen, a goddamn Sharpie with a needle in it, and saying you got to kill Castro with this? Do you know how close you have to be to get somebody with a needle?
Yeah, and if it doesn't right work, you gotta, you know?
Imagine it doesn't. I mean, you're going to die. Everybody's going to see that this happened, or you're going to get caught. There's no way you're going to get away with this, Scott.
You're going to be like, sign this autograph for me, El Presidente. And then you just like, just like fully stab it.
That's insane. That's just blatant.
Federal agents mad because you're blatant.
Rabe has argued that the quote-unquote Kennedy administration showed no interest in Castro's repeated requests that the United States cease its campaign of sabotage and terrorism against Cuba. Kennedy did not pursue a dual-track policy toward Cuba. The United States would entertain only proposals of surrender.
Surrender what? They didn't do anything. What the fuck do you mean surrender?
Well, no, he means just for the regime to go away. Like, that's what he means by surrender, just Castro, like, stepping down.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And again, he did nothing. Castro didn't do shit. He's just like, go fuck yourself.
I didn't do shit.
I didn't do shit. I've been waiting for a long time for a hit on Corncob TV.
Cuban exiles are like, I did my part. Guerrillas are like, I did my part. Cuban army's like, I did my part. United States government's like, we didn't do shit.
What is it, Starship Troopers? I'm doing my part.
Rabe further documents how quote-unquote exile groups such as Alpha 66 and the Second Front of Escambray staged hit-and-run raids on the island on ships transporting goods, purchased arms in the United States, and launched attacks from the Bahamas. Harvard historian Jorge Dominguez States that Operation Mongoose's scope included sabotage actions against a railway bridge, petroleum storage facilities, a molasses storage container, a petroleum refinery, a power plant, a sawmill, and a floating crane. He states, quote-unquote, only once in the 1,000 pages of documentation did a U.S. official raise something that resembled a faint moral objection to U.S. government-sponsored terrorism. All of these were also carried out to undermine the Cuban economy. The Cuba Project was originally designed to culminate in October of 1962 with a quote-unquote open revolt and overthrow of the communist regime. This, though, was at the peak of the Cuban Missile Crisis, wherein the U.S. and the Soviet Union, as mentioned, came alarmingly close to nuclear war over the presence of Soviet missiles in Cuba, verified by low-flying aircraft on photographic missions and ground surveillance photography.
Did any of those planes ever get shot down? I feel like I remember a story about one of the planes, if it was U-2, but one of the planes being shot down, but I might be wrong.
Well, one of them was shot down of the Soviet Union, and that's Francis Gary Powers. And he was in the
U-2 bomber, or the U-2 spy plane, but I'm talking about over Cuba specifically.
No, not over Cuba, but over the Soviet Union. I believe two were shot down. One where where nothing was recovered, and then Gary Powers, where they recovered not only him, but his aircraft.
Did any of the planes that were flying over Cuba ever get shot at by the Cuban military, like their AA gun?
Well, a lot of the U-2s were flying like too fast for them to like hit.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of like high depth like photos from that period as well. Because one of the favorite photos they would hand around was that it was a photo of a guy using an outhouse. Like one of the Cuban soldiers, because they didn't have roofs on them.
Uh-huh. That's if you ever look at those pictures that like they took back then. Like obviously, it's not 4K nice crisp shit that we have today. But like, I don't know how these dudes were able to pick out the things that they were picking out and like identifying from these pictures. Because it's just like, I mean, obviously you get training and all that, but I've seen like pictures of like the spy planes, photographs that they've taken of Cuba where like, look, they took pictures of nuclear missiles. And I'm like, where, where the fuck is that?
They were in the storage buildings, and they knew like all the equipment. And they falsely believed that they had not actually delivered the missiles yet, like the actual nuclear warheads, because they knew where it was kept in the storage area. And it was standard Red Army policy that if there were nuclear weapons in storage, they would have two guards. But there was only one guard. And what they didn't realize was that the Cubans had a different setup. And the Cubans had only put one guard on the nuclear warheads. The operation, though, was suspended on October 30th, 1962, but three out of the 10 six-man sabotage teams had already been deployed to Cuba. Dominguez wrote that Kennedy put a hold on Mongoose's actions as the Cuban Missile Crisis escalated after seeing the pictures of Soviet nuclear weapons stationed on the north shore of Cuba, quote-unquote, returned to its policy of sponsoring terrorism against Cuba as the confrontation with the Soviet Union lessened.
So his plan to deal with a country that's nuclear at the time was to use terrorism.
Well, they had borrowed nuclear weapons, but yes.
It doesn't – dude, let me tell you something right now. It doesn't fucking matter how you got nukes. All that matters is you have them.
It's important
for the historical record, I suppose, but it really doesn't fucking matter.
They were loner nukes.
Okay. Yeah, like once you have the nukes, though, that's it. You know, you're good. You know,
these are payday loan nukes.
Yeah,
interest rates are going to kill them.
They got them at Amscot.
That Amscot guy's going to be knocking on Cuba's door at 6 a.m. next week. I tell you,
Mr. Castro, it's me, Jeff Lansdale. No, that's not my brother.
You know, I just do the job, sir. I'm going to have to take these nuclear weapons back. I don't like. However, still alive at this time, though there was a scare, Noam Chomsky has argued that the quote-unquote Rest terrorist peace. Operations continued through the tensest moments of the Cuban Missile Crisis, or that terrorist operations continued through the tensest moments of the missile crisis, and remarked that they were formally canceled on October 30th, several days after the Kennedy and Khrushchev agreement, but went on nonetheless.
Rest
in peace. That's cute. Rest in peace.
By that, I mean he gets a good night's sleep.
Chomsky? Chomsky died. Didn't he die this week?
No, he's still alive. He just went to the hospital, and somebody accidentally put out the obituary. Because, when a 95-year-old man goes to the hospital, it's
they got it ready. I'm talking about those people, especially the New York Times, those editors are sitting there with their mouse just hovering over the post button, and they're just waiting to hear it.
Manufactured consent,
They have two of the two of the people that still work at the New York Times. Meanwhile, ChatGPT is churning out the terrible articles that they make.
I love how you can tell immediately within three sentences this AI generated. You're just this is trash. Bye.
Nah, there's a generator that can do that. Sometimes, if you go to a site, because we're mostly getting redirected to bullshit. But so many articles are run through that now, dude. It's fucking crazy. It's way more than you think. I'm gonna go ahead and say 60-70%. I seriously doubt you can.
What do you mean? You can absolutely tell. As soon as you start reading, there's nuances in human type and speech that you can tell it's AI.
I can send it to you about how they were using or the guy that was creating the thing to detect whether or not they're AI. So if you go to a fake BuzzFeed website or something like that, and it's done via AI, it's easy. But if the New York Times releases an article and they run it through ChatGPT, or it gets it's very difficult to tell if you know what you're doing.
That's assuming that it's run through ChatGPT with a million filters on it. I'm just talking about your average. Hey, listen, we're smacking an article up. It's written by AI. You can tell. Instantly.
Yeah, I said that 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's all.
Which I totally forgive you for, because I'm also a little baked. But
I said Pillsbury baby.
I said those types of articles. Yeah, you could totally tell. It's not fucking AI either. I'm so sick of people calling it AI.
What is it?
It's not artificial intelligence. It's just a language model trained by human beings. That's it. It doesn't think.
So, how would you say that? I'm not trying to be snarky. I just want to do it.
It doesn't actually think.
It's procedurally generated.
Yeah. There you go.
So, accordingly.
It's just not intelligence. They keep selling it it's intelligent, it thinks or something. And it's it really doesn't.
I mean, it's very clearly some of the dumbest shit ever, because you can just one quick Google, and that stupid AI response that it gives you is just like. Or sorry, that procedurally generated response that it gives you is just fucking ridiculous half the time.
Or not you. You can call it AI. I don't want a problem with that. I'm talking about just like they need to just drop the term for it, because it's not. But it's actually really powerful for some things. But the people that use it for shit like that, it's so obvious.
It's also YouTube, dangerous too. If you see some of the results it's giving back, where it's like, it's safe to drink up to one can of paint a day. You're like, wait, what? the fuck?
So the way I look at that is that, and I'm not this huge pro AI guy, I just think that they have a focus and a use, is that if someone looks up how to drink paint or something like that, or is drinking paint okay, and they see something that says yes and they drink paint, I'm not real worried about that person dying. All right. Let's just be honest, right? They were probably going to die sometime soon.
Bro, you sound like me with regards to school zones, bro. Elementary, middle school, I'm here for it. If you can't cross a street by the time you are in high school without a fucking school zone, you deserve to get fucking splattered.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Ridiculous. Elementary, middle school, I'm with it. You need a school zone, a crossing guard, because people drive like shitheads. But if by the time you are in high school, if you can't figure out how to push a button and wait to cross the street and look both ways, you deserve it. You deserve to get fucking splattered. Edit, cut it out if you want. I don't give a shit. I say this shit in public.
TikTok for Port St. Lucie where they're always running the school buses, because the school bus, you have to stop for the school bus, and then the cop comes out and arrests them immediately.
I love it.
It's this group of people, but I get it.
So. As it's already been sort of figured out as well, One key issue with Operation Mongoose throughout its operations is that the U.S. Still lacked the capability of effectively getting information to the majority of the Cuban people. The United States
need an internet. I mean, wait, what's an internet, Jim? Forget I
Al Gore
said
is Al Gore born already in 62?
Get those eggheads a DARPA on this. The United States also had a trade embargo on Cuba, a denial of bunkering facilities, increased port security, a denial of bunkering facilities, increased port security and control procedure on transshipment, technical data, and customs inspection. So the U.S. also used diplomatic means to frustrate Cuban trade negotiations in Israel, Jordan, Iran, Greece, and possibly Japan.
Trade negotiations between Cuba and those countries, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
From the outset, Lansdowne, fellow members of the SGA, identified internal support for an anti-Castro movement to be the most important aspect of the operation. American organization support for anti-Castro forces in Cuba was seen as key, which expanded American involvement from what they mostly from what had then mostly been economic and military assistance to rebel forces. Therefore, Lansdale hoped to organize an effort within the operation led by the CIA to covertly build support for a popular movement within Cuba. This, though, had a major challenge. It was difficult to identify anti-Castro forces within Cuba, and there lacked a groundswell of popular support that Cuban insurgents could tap into. Within the first few months, an internal review of Operation Mongoose cited the CIA's limited capabilities to gather hard intelligence and conduct covert operations in Cuba.
So basically, they couldn't find enough people who were anti-Castro to really make it work the way they wanted to?
Yeah, and just like sending like random guys from like Miami every now and then on boats to like blow something up wasn't exactly going to, you know, tip the scale.
Right.
Don Johnson would beg to differ.
They didn't send Don Johnson.
Imagine like your average person from like Miami nightlife that you see like those really douchey photos. Imagine putting like 10 of them on like a boat and being like, all right, go to Cuba and blow shit up, go.
No, they're just all like pudgy guys that look like Pablo Escobar. or Cotton Hill and his band of friends. Listen, like Gummy.
Unpopular opinion, Pablo Escobar, while being a monster, did demonstrably more good than he did bad. His secondary actions by what happens after you sell drugs to people and what happens after that, you know, if you want to put your thumb on the scale and include those in his actions, then yeah, he's an awful human being. However, how much he did for the people of Colombia and these neighborhoods that were like, we are not going to tell you who this dude is or where he is, entire cities being like, fuck you, we're not telling you about this guy, really speaks volumes as to the good that he was doing in these neighborhoods. But it has been so just watered down by United States propaganda. I'm not saying drugs are okay and trafficking and all that.
I'd say that checks out as a first paragraph money. In your essay.
But what he did with the money to give it back to the poor people is good.
So we have our narco-apologist candidate.
Good God.
Not narco, just Pablo.
I'm telling you, I don't know what he got into, but I need to get into that before I go into debate class.
It's called... Voodoo Ranger, bro.
Let me tell you something.
I will tell you, though, don't go into debate class drunk. You'll just start screaming and sound like a lunatic.
You're all idiots anyway.
By January of 1962, the CIA had failed to recruit suitable Cuban operatives that could infiltrate the Castro regime. The CIA Lansdale estimated that they required 30 Cuban operatives.
They sent
12, though.
Well, they had to find people who could, like, infiltrate the government. So not just, like, guys who can get in the country, like, guys who can, like, get into, like higher level, like points in the Cuban government or military.
They couldn't find 30 people that they could just pay to be like, hey, we're going to give you a fuckload of money and we'll bring you over to America once this is all kind of said and done. Like, we'll give you citizenship for doing this. They couldn't find 30 of those.
Well, I mean, it's the early days of the revolution. You know, things are going hot. You know, you're changing the country. You know, these people are like from Cuba. Even the people who are like left Cuba and are in the United States, like they want to be go back to Cuba so bad that they're, you know, they're doing these insane like ideas of like ass pulls of like, well, if we do this, this, and this, like we're gonna be back in power, baby.
Jesus Christ.
Lansdale also criticized the CIA effort to ramp up their activities to meet the expedient timelines. Robert McCone of the CIA complained that Lansdale's timeline was too accelerated and that it would be difficult to achieve the tasks demanded in such a short time frame. In February, Lansdale offered a comprehensive review of all Operation Mongoose activities to date. His tone was urgent, stating, quote unquote, time is running against us. The Cuban people feel helpless and are losing hope fast. They need symbols of inside resistance and of outside interest soon. They need something they can join with the hope of starting to work surely towards overthrowing the regime. He then asked for a ramp up of efforts from all agencies and departments to expedite the execution of the project. He laid out a 6-part plan targeting the overthrow of the Castro regime in October of 1962. In March of 1962, a key intelligence report written by the CIA was produced for Lansdale. It showed that although roughly only a quarter of the Cuban population stood behind the Castro regime, the rest of the population was both disaffected and passive. The report writes that the passive majority of Cubans had, quote unquote, resigned to acceptance of the present regime as the effect government in being. The conclusion was that an internal revolt within Cuba was unlikely.
Obviously,
the lack of progress and promise of success through the first couple of months of the operation strained relationships with the SGA. McCone criticized the handling of the operation, believing that, quote unquote, national policy was too cautious and suggested a U.S. Military effort to train more guerrillas and large scale amphibious landing military exercises were conducted off the coast of North Carolina in April of 1962. By July, the operation showed little progress. Phase one of Operation Mongoose grew to a close. The special group provided plans for March 14th, 1962, for the first phase of the operation until the end of July. There were four main objectives in phase one. It was to gather hard intelligence on the target area, undertake all other political, economic, and covert actions short of creating a revolt in Cuba or the need for U.S. armed intervention, C, be consistent with U.S. Overt policy, and be in the position to pull away with a minimum loss of assets and U.S. prestige, and D, continue JCS planning and essential preliminary actions for a decisive U.S. Capability for intervention.
Okay.
During phase one, the Punta del Este conference was a major U.S. political action to isolate Castro and neutralize his influence in the hemisphere. President Kennedy's successful visit to Mexico was another major U.S. political action with an impact upon the operation, but was not directly tied to the operation. Two political operations were performed in Phase 1, counter-Castro communist propaganda exploitation of May Day, and to arouse strong hemisphere reactions to Cuban military suppression of hunger demonstration at Cardenas in June.
All right.
Another key interest for Operation Mongoose was the Cuban refugees, as it was thought they wanted to overthrow the communist regime in Havana and recapture their homeland. The refugees were given open U.S. assistance to remain in the country, yet were involved in covert actions in a limited way. Policy limitations of audibility and visibility were taken into consideration for the handling and use of refugee potential. As Phase 1 drew to a close, Phase 2's projected plan was written up and considered for possibilities. The first option was to cancel operational plans and treat Cuba as a bloc nation and protect the hemisphere from it. The next possibility was to exert all possible diplomatic, economic, psychological, and other pressures to overthrow the Castro regime without overt employment of U.S. military.
Okay.
And another possibility was help the Cubans overthrow the Castro regime with a step-by-step phase to ensure success, including the use of military force if required. Okay. The last possibility was to use a provocation and overthrow the Castro regime by U.S. military force.
Or just leave him the fuck alone. How about that? Just leave him the fuck alone. Just Jesus Christ. How about there's another option here, guys. You're totally missing one that you've left on the table. Leave them alone.
In his July review, Lansdale recommended a more aggressive short-term plan of action. He believed the time was of the essence, especially given intensified Soviet military buildup in Cuba. New plans were drawn up to recruit more Cubans to infiltrate the Castro regime, to interrupt Cuban radio and television broadcasts, and to deploy commando sabotage units. However, by late August, the Soviet military buildup in Cuba disgruntled the Kennedy administration. Their fear was that an open military retaliation against the United States and Berlin for U.S. Covert operations could be possible. By October, the Cuban Missile Crisis heated up. President Kennedy demanded the cessation of Operation Mongoose.
Shut it down? Okay.
Yeah. So like they said in October of that date, that's when they shut it down, October 20th. You have to remember, like, other people are saying, like, well, they kept doing it. They just weren't doing it, like, officially in this regard.
Okay.
And not through the White House.
Gotcha.
So, next week, or next episode, I should say, not next week. It'll be the week after next. We'll talk about plots to kill Fidel Castro and then how we came to find out about all of this.
No, we're going to blue ball me for another 2 weeks. Duh!
I'm shocked. Shocked, I say. All right. And with that.
Oh, my God.
Good night.
I'm so excited.
Good luck.
Bye.